Okay, today, Be'ez Hashem, we're going to conclude the seventh parak and begin the eighth parak of Maseches Ksuba. So we are learning Parak Zayin Mishnah Yud. So we were talking about if a man has a mum gadol that the woman can demand a divorce. So the Mishnah says that some things are so bad that everyone would say that it's considered to be absolute grounds for divorce. The following husbands will be forced to divorce their wives because they're considered to be impossible to live with. Mukashchin, if a guy has tzaras. Ubal pulipus, or a guy smells awful. Vamekamets, his job is that he collects dog manure, so he's always reeking. Vamitzayif nechoshes, or he's a copper miner. Vaborsi, or he's a tanner. So these are things that are awful smells that it's very difficult for a woman to live with. Beinshay vamatshelo nisu, whether these conditions or jobs were things that the husband had before they got married, obey mishin nisu noldu, or whether they first got these jobs or these conditions after they're married. Valkulan amra meir, afal pisha hisnima, even if there was a tanai in the marriage that, look, you know what I do for a living, and you know that I always smell, Yecholi Hishatomar, she could still demand out of the marriage because she could say, Svura Haisi Shani Yecholi Lekabel, Vachaveni Yecholi Lekabel. I thought I'd be able to tolerate it. I can't, meaning I thought that it wouldn't be such a big deal for me. It is a big deal for me. Vacham Ram Mekabel Sial Karcha. And the Cham say, no, if she knew about his medical condition and she married him anyway, then she has to accept it because she accepted it, Chutzmi Mukashchin, except for the guy who has Tzara. Because by sleeping together, his flesh decays, and that's something that's dangerous for him. And she certainly does not belong in a marriage where anytime they're intimate, it's going to be dangerous for him. Now, Maisa B'Tzidon, there was a story that once happened in Sidon, B'Borsi Echa Chemes, that there was a tanner who had died without children, Vahilo Ach Borsi, and he had a brother who was also a tanner. So Amr Chachamim, so the Chachamim said, well, can the woman say, I'm not interested in being married to a tanner because tanners reek? So Yechali Hishatomar, she could say, L'chicha Yisi Yechali L'kabel, I know that your brother that I was happily married to is a tanner. I was willing to accept it for him because I loved him. L'cha in Yechali L'kabel, but I can't tolerate it with you. So the Yavam can marry the Yavama even against her will. But if the Yavama has a reasonable objection to the marriage, then the Beis Din is going to force the Yavam to do Chalitza. So in this case, she has a reasonable objection, and the Beis Din is going to force a chalitza. So now we begin the eighth parak. Now we said that once you have nisuin, the husband is allowed to eat the peros of his wife's property, meaning if she owns land that produces peros, he can farm it, and he can eat whatever produce that land produces. So can a wife sell her property or give her property away as a matana? So even before nisuin, there may be certain restrictions, because then the husband will never have the opportunity to benefit from the payros of that land. But it's going to depend on when she got the property and when she wants to sell it. So we're going to have four cases in the Mishnah. The first case is going to be about where she got the property when she was single and wants to sell it during Erusin. Second case is she got the property during Erusin and wants to sell it still during Erusin. Third case is she got the property after Nisuin and wants to sell it after Nisuin. And the fourth case is she got the property during Erusin and she wants to sell it after Nisuin. So let's take it one by one. Case number one. If a woman inherited property before Erusin, say that she's allowed to sell it, give it away during Erusin, and that's a binding transaction, because she got the property when she was single and she had no connection to her husband at that time, so she could do with it as she pleases. Nafla Misha Nisarsa, if she inherited the property after Erusin, Beishami Omrim Timkor, so Beishami says she could sell it during Erusin before the husband ever does Nisuin and therefore gains the rights to the payros. Beisal Omrim Lo Timkor, Beisal says she's not allowed to sell it because she's going to be depriving him of the future peros. But both Beisham and Beisal agree that if she did sell it, then the sale is in fact binding. Amar Rabbi Yehuda, the Rabbi Yehuda says, Amru l'fnei Rabbi Gamliel, the Chum Setz Rabbi Gamliel, hol v'zacha b'isha lo yiska ben chasim, since he gained the wife, meaning he did erusin, shouldn't he also gain the property with the erusin? Meaning he should, and therefore he should have control over the property, that if she sells it during erusin, he should be able to confiscate it and take it back from the guy who bought it after the nisuin. Why did Beis Hamikdash still say that look, we're ashamed of not understanding the halacha about property that a wife got after Nisuin. Meaning, we don't even understand why a husband is allowed to confiscate property that someone bought after Nisuin, that the wife had acquired and sold after Nisuin. You want to even take property from before the Nisuin and give the husband the right to take it back? Meaning, you're suggesting that he could even seize property that she acquired during Erisin? That's crazy. We're not even happy about the fact that he could seize property that she got after Nisuin. And that brings us to the third case. Nafala Mishanisa, if she got a Yerusha after Nisuin, both Mishan and Bisal agree, husband is allowed to confiscate that from whoever had purchased that property. And then the final case, Ad Shalom Nises Venises, if she had the Yerusha before she had Nisuin, and then she got fully married, Ram Gamliel Omer, Machra Venasna Kaim, Ram Gamliel said, if she sold the property already, the transaction stands. She acquired the property before the Nisuin, before the husband had any rights to it, so she has the rights to the property and the peiros. So even if she sells the property after Nisuin, it's going to be a binding transaction, and the husband can't do anything about it. So Rabbi Chanina ben Akavya said, wait a second. Amru lefnei Rabbi Gamliel, the Chum said to Rabbi Gamliel, hol v'zacha b'isha lo yiska ben chasim. Once he has Nisuin with the wife, shouldn't he be able to have the Nechasim? Why is that transaction a binding transaction? So Amar Lahem, Rav Gamliel said back, Al Chadashim Anuboshim, we're embarrassed enough that a husband can take away property from a buyer that his wife acquired after Nisuin and sold after Nisuin. El Shetem Agalgul Inasei Shanim, you want to give the husband the right to take away property that his wife acquired before the Nisuin? We're not happy about any of that. So no, absolutely not. So let's review what we learned today. In Perek Zayin, Mishnah Yud, we said that the following conditions that a husband has are grounds for the wife to demand a divorce. If he's a mukashchin, or he's smelly, or he's a tanner, or he's a coppersmith, or things like that, whether he had these jobs or these conditions before the Nisuin and after the Nisuin. And on all of them, Reb Meir says, even if there was a tanai built in, she could say, yeah, I made a tanai. I mean, he made a tanai that he does these things, but I thought I'd be able to tolerate it. I can't, and therefore she could demand out of the marriage. And the Chum say that she's required to accept all of these conditions if he had them previously, except for Mukashchin, because that's mamish unlivable. There was one story where a woman was married to a tanner, and she lived happily with him, and then he died, and his brother was also a tanner in the family business, wanted to do Yibum, and the woman said, I can't be married to a tanner. So they said, what are you talking about? You were married to a tanner all these years? No, for him I was willing to accept it, but I'm not willing to accept it from you. Then Perek Ches Mishnah Aleph, we said that we had four cases. One is a woman gets Nechasim before Erisin, so both Bishai and Bishil agree that she could sell that Nechasim and there's nothing the husband could do about it. Second case was, she got Nechasim after Erisin, so Bishai says she could sell it, Bishil says she cannot sell it, but they're both moda that if she did sell it, the sale is binding. So Rabbi Yehuda said that the Chum challenged Rabbi Gamliel. I don't understand. Once he has Erisin with her, why is the sale binding? Why can't the husband confiscate the properties? And Rabbi Gamliel said back, we don't like the idea of the husband confiscating properties, even in cases that were after Nisuin. You're trying to extend that right of the husband? We're not happy about that. Third case was that she got the properties after Nisuin, so everyone agrees that if she sells such properties, then the husband is allowed to confiscate those properties. And the fourth case case is she got the properties before Nisuin, but then she had Nisuin. So Rav Gamliel says that if she sold those properties, the sale is binding. And the Chachamim said to Rav Gamliel, I don't understand. Once he has Nisuin, why is the sale binding? Shouldn't he be allowed to confiscate those properties? And the response was, even properties that she got after the Nisuin, we're not happy about saying that he has the right to confiscate. Certainly properties that she didn't get until after that she got before the Nisuin, we're not going to give him, we're not going to extend to him the right to confiscate such properties. Okay, Bezrem, tomorrow we'll pick up with Perches, Mishnah Beis.